The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
Coming up on show 1020, a Saturday special interview all about renewables and how you can own your own bit of a wind turbine. Well, today we're talking to Ripple Energy CEO Sarah Merrick. You can own your own piece of a wind turbine if you want to. Obviously, buying one, well, it's quite expensive, but how about owning a bit of one? Which will allow you to save money on your lecky bills for the next 25 years. A UK project. Sarah was working in the wind industry when she had this idea and became a kind of an evening weekend side hustle. It evolved into a full-on business, which is now growing very rapidly, very successful. But why would you want to invest in that technology? Well, you know, I'm not an investor in this, and this is by no means investment advice, because it is involving asking people to put their money into something to pay for a wind turbine, but then enjoy the spoils, if you like, of that energy being generated. And also, if you want to put your money into renewables in some way, but you can't have solar panels on your roof, it's the wrong direction, or you rent, or whatever, then this could be something that you want to have a look at. It was a joint interview between myself and my buddy Nick Ramo, who runs his EV Nick YouTube channel. That's the other voice that you will hear on this. It was a live streamed interview a couple of days ago. And so let me know what you think about this. I think I just about got my head around it by the end of the show. It's definitely not a simple idea. It's not like, well, put some money in, get money off your electricity bill. It's not a tariff. They're not an energy company. They don't supply your electric, but they do work with energy companies. A new breed of energy. So I'm going to call it an energy company because they are generating energy, but it's all about green in or renewable investment ideas. And again, this is not investment advice because, you know, your money is at risk. So have a listen. I'd love to know what you think about this. And here's how we kicked it off. Sarah's idea is for a community, well, not community, but a co-op funded energy system of the future. Sarah, how close am I to getting your business in 5 seconds?
Not far off. Yeah, so we basically enable people to own a tiny bit of a large-scale wind farm and then get the electricity that it generates supplied to their home via the grid. So as an alternative to rooftop solar that's really cheap, instead of putting solar panels on your roof, you own a little bit of a wind farm and then the power gets supplied to you via the grid. So yeah, it's just a really simple way of going green.
So who owns wind farms at the moment? What kind of organisations?
So mostly it's sort of like utilities and quite a few banks own them and sort of infrastructure funds and same with, you know, gas-fired power stations and stuff. And we just think actually the thing is with wind and solar is that people can own them. So there's no reason really why big companies and big funds need to own them. We think people can actually do a pretty good job at it themselves.
So
with our help, obviously.
Yeah. So. Let me try and understand this. So if I sign up to Ripple Energy, am I signing up to an energy contract where I get gas and electricity off of you like any other company, or can I just be a Ripple Energy member and have another tariff with someone else? How does that exactly work?
So we're not an electricity supplier ourselves. So we do all the wind farm ownership bit. We manage all of that for you. And then we partner with suppliers. So we've partnered with Co-op Energy and Octopus Energy for our first project. And then for our second project, we plan to partner with up to 8 suppliers, which means that basically you buy your bit of the wind farm and you can then be supplied by Octopus or Co-op or one of our other suppliers. And then it means you've still got choice, so you don't have to stay with that supplier for 25 years. The 25 years that the wind farm is going to last for, you can switch between them if you want to. So you still got all the choice that you otherwise would have. And you, obviously, those suppliers offer electricity and gas. But yeah, we don't do the supply bit. We do the wind farm bit, and then we tell each of the suppliers how much has to be, what savings have to be applied to your bill each month. So because you own a bit of a wind farm, you get the cheap electricity that it generates that gets supplied via, say, Co-op Energy. And then you get a saving applied to your bill every month according to how much your bit of the wind farm generated the previous month.
Excellent. Now, I remember when I first became more interested in kind of green tariffs. We need to be very careful, actually, in terms of saying about green tariffs, in terms of which energy companies buy from renewable energy providers. And some do it with kind of, it's not a fudge of a paperwork. It's and there's nothing dodgy going on, but there's ways of having a green tariff and not actually buying that green electricity. But I'll put that aside for now. I sound so stupid now admitting to this, but I remember when I first saw that, I was thinking, well, it's the same cable that comes to my house as my neighbor's house. So, and you know, obviously going back a long time when green tariffs came around. And so just explain to the people watching and listening how that works. Clearly, the national grid supply electricity. The electrons aren't of a certain type. So how does it work?
Exactly. So you can't, with a green tariff, you can't track electrons through the grid. So, but what you can measure is what goes in, and then you measure what goes out. So with a normal, with a green tariff, basically you have to get each wind farm generates a certificate, a green certificate, for every bit of electricity that it generates. And then to have a green tariff, that supplier has to say, I've supplied this much electricity under a green tariff, so here's this many green certificates. They match each other off, and then that's a green tariff. But you don't have to have bought electricity from a wind farm in order to have a green tariff. You can just buy the certificate. So you could, if you're a wind farm, you could sell your power to one supplier, and then you could sell your green certificate to somebody else. It's the one with the green certificate that gets to claim the greenness, as you so to speak.
Yeah.
Whereas with Ripple, what you're doing is, it's still a green tariff, or you're on a green tariff, but basically it's you own a bit of the wind farm. Your bit of that generation is bought by Octopus and then is supplied to your home under an Octopus tariff. So nobody can trace the exact electrons through the grid to your home, but contractually it's your electricity that is bought by Octopus and is supplied to your home. So it means that you get you get the cheap green electricity. It's your electricity. However, we can't obviously guarantee that it's the exact electrons that your wind farm generates. There's absolutely no way of doing that.
You mean you're not going to come and install a cable from your turbine to my house?
No, exactly. So, we've got the national grid. The national grid's fantastic. It works really, really well. So we might as well use it, is our thoughts, really.
Yeah. One thing that I've discussed even with Greg in the past is, in fact, someone's just asked in the questions about distribution costs. So here in the UK, we have just set distribution costs no matter where the energy basically is coming from. So is there any, I believe, is the National Grid looking at ways where if, say, you installed a turbine outside my house, almost, just literally a couple of miles away, and someone else has got a turbine which is 50 miles away, is there any going to be a point where the closer the turbine is to you, the less distribution cost is going to be to you?
You could potentially. However, we think that it's a lot easier. You know, if you want to try and get those customers in that very local area, that's great, but that's going to be quite expensive to try and get quite a high, you know, you'd be talking whatever, 10-20% of people in a village or something to make that work. We think it's a lot better just to let anyone from all over the country own a bit of a wind farm, and get the electricity that it generates, because it's just so much easier. And actually, it's much better to offer a really simple solution rather than one that says, okay, if you live in this postcode, you can do this. If you live in that postcode, it's that. It's just, yeah, we've just gone for simplicity. It's like, it's just really, really simple. And yeah, they're undoubtedly, there are sort of, yeah, more complicated, very localized solutions that you can get. But we think actually the economies of scale with energy are so massive. So, you know, you might have a small wind farm that can, you know, in theory be powering a village or something, but actually it's far, far better to have big wind farms. And those big wind farms are unlikely to be located, whatever, outside London or, you know, in certainly in southeast of England. So it's far better for customers all over the UK to be able to just get access to the cheap electricity that a big wind farm is generating rather than try and generate at a sort of smaller scale, but more locally. So obviously there'll be loads of different solutions. And, you know, if people want to do that, that's great. But what we're about is just big scale projects that are open to everyone.
Now, Nick and I are both on Octopus Agile, so our, you know, because we're both nerds anyway, so we don't mind our electricity price changing every half an hour. It's not an onerous thing to look at the app and work out when to charge the car. So, but the essence of that tariff, which wouldn't suit so many people, is that when the wholesale price is lower, that gets passed on from Octopus. They had a small fee to cover running their business. Yeah. And equally, when it's expensive between 4 and 7 p.m. in the afternoon, they pass that wholesale cost on to the consumer. And if you change habits, it's amazingly how, you know, a few pounds in your pocket can make you change habits. It's that's a big part of going green, is changing light bulbs and changing the way you use electricity. So help us understand. So we know the grid price fluctuates, and we know that very well because we're on that tariff. The price of electricity coming out of a wind turbine is that pretty much constant over the 25 years of its life? And how does that then mean that my electricity would be cheaper? Because I get that I'm not getting the electricity from that wind turbine. I get that it's not free. So how do the mechanics of it work with the price of electricity?
So basically, you can have, obviously, the price of electricity changes every half hour. It changes every hour, every day, every month, every year. So what we've done is we've fixed the price over a whole year. And then basically what, and the cost of operating the wind farm is the same throughout the whole year, throughout its 25 year lifetime, basically. So what happens is Octopus essentially buys the electricity at the wind farm's operating cost instead of buying it at the market price, which goes up and down all the time. So then the difference between Octopus paying the market price, which it otherwise would do if it was any other wind farm, and the fact that it's paid the cheaper operating cost, that saving is passed on to you as the owner. So if the wholesale price was £50 or 5p a kilowatt hour, and the operating cost of the wind farm is 2p a kilowatt hour, that 3p a kilowatt hour is passed on to you. If your bit of the wind farm generates 100 kilowatt hours, you would save £3 off your bill week or whatever. So it's a way of stabilizing the cost. So basically, if you cover, or if all of your electricity consumption is covered by your share of the wind farm, the electricity part of your electricity bill isn't the volatile wholesale price, it's the operating cost of your wind farm. And it's that stable low price that is passed on to consumers. So you get to benefit, you know, there's very few other ways that you can stabilize your electricity costs for 25 years, except by owning a bit of a wind farm that is going to be operating at a very stable price for the long term.
Yeah. And I think another aspect to look at is, I mean, I care about price, but I also care about being green. And that is one of the reasons I'm on a tariff like Agile, because at the moment it's actually more expensive because it's the, you know, a couple of generations are down. And I think with your project, it is just so much greener because you're actually physically paying towards having these turbines built. I mean, are you looking for onshore or offshore, or is there no?
First of all, it's going to be onshore just because that's super simple. And we're keeping it, you know, we only launched last year, so it's all really, really simple for now. And then, but we totally want to get into offshore in the longer term. So yeah, we're starting, like, our first project is just it's a single turbine in South Wales. We want to be getting into bigger and bigger projects. And like I said, sort of, you know, we can do any fuel-free technology. So we've looked at a few solar projects as well. So it'll be wind, solar, onshore wind, offshore wind, and solar, basically. But it's all about that impact. And I think that's a really key point, is with Ripple, you're making these wind farms happen. That's not necessarily the case when you're on a green tariff. But also, we work, you can be on Ripple and on Agile. So if your savings from your wind farm are, whatever, £10 in a month, you get that £10 applied to your Agile bill, whether you've done loads and loads of optimization and got your bill down to £50, you then get that £10, you know, brought down to £40. Or if you haven't done anything and you've been using loads of power in peak times and your bill's £100, you get the £10 applied to your £100 bill. So they work completely in tandem.
Yeah. So if I now go onto your website and sign up, I can stick with my Octopus tariff as I am right now, and I can invest in that wind turbine and see that back on my Octopus bill or through you.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think the first, you know, 10, 15 minutes, we've established the business of Ripple, because it's not something that is as simple as saying we'll build a wind turbine and then we'll have a tariff, and the tariff will be X pence per kilowatt hour. It's not designed that way. That's not the business. So thank you for helping me understand it more. Let's go back a little bit and do the superhero origin story. It still is a new business. This was something that you wanted to do whilst you were still working within the industry. And I don't know if you want to say who you were working for or not, but this started as a kind of an evening and weekend business, a bootstrapped company that you started from the genesis of an idea and you've built up. So give us that origin story.
Yeah. So I was working for Vestas, which is the world's largest wind turbine manufacturer, and I was covering public affairs. So I was talking to politicians, and I was vice chair of the UK Wind Association as well. So I was like working in the heart of the electricity of the wind industry. And then it's probably 2 or 3 years beforehand, we just worked out, actually, if somebody, you know, the amount of a wind farm that somebody would have to own it to supply their to generate enough electricity to meet their electricity needs was so tiny. And it was like, well, nobody's doing this. And I was talking to politicians saying, you know, wind is actually now the UK's cheapest source of power, and it's also one of the most popular forms of power. And then I worked out, how much it would cost somebody to actually own a bit of a wind turbine. And I was like, actually, why isn't anyone doing this? And then so after a couple of years when nobody else was doing it, it was like, all right, I'll do it then, sort of thing. So I just sort of developed the idea. I set up a company, and then I just developed the idea weekends and stuff. And then, you know, it got to the point where I couldn't do any more. You know, I just didn't have enough time. I needed to sort of focus on it properly. So then I, quit my job. That was back in spring 17, I think. Took the summer off, spent loads of time with the kids, and then, you know, come September, just cracked on with it. And we sort of grew from there. So it started off with just me. Then two other people joined, our projects guy, so our wind farm guy, and our CTO joined about sort of 6 months later. Then we raised some money to get so we could hire even more people. And then we've just been developing it since then. But I mean, ultimately, it seemed such a brilliant idea that needed to happen. And then when nobody else was doing it, I just thought, right, I'll do it then.
Wow. And so although the company has energy in its name, obviously, as you say, you are not an energy supplier. You are a business that will connect lots of dots, and you have that knowledge to connect that. So you don't build wind turbines.
We manage that. I always say we're never going to own a spanner. So we manage the build. So we manage all the due diligence. We manage letting the tenders for the civils contracts, the electrical engineering contracts, the turbines, all that sort of thing. But we are not going to get up a turbine and mend it when it, when it needs maintenance. We will manage the third parties who do all that. So we're the sort of people in the middle that just bring everything together so that, you know, because it is quite complicated, so you need people who are expert in doing all that. So that's what we do. We bring it all together, package it up, make it really, really simple, but we don't build the turbine. We obviously build it. We manage it on behalf of our customers. Yeah. They clearly don't know how to build it, you know. So we manage the whole thing for them. But yeah, we won't own a spanner, basically.
And equally, you aren't asking people to invest in your business. So you might be asking for a £100 or a £1,000 investment, according to whatever people want to, commit to the idea of owning part of a wind turbine, but they're not investing in Ripple. So how does that framework, that legal framework, happen in terms of almost sort of separation of church and state, if you like?
Exactly. So you've got the wind farm is owned by a cooperative. So we helped get the cooperative, there are independent co-op directors. So we sort of, again, we provide all the admin support and arrange all the meetings, do all the papers and stuff for that. But it's a separate organization, which is a co-op. So member people, our customers join the co-op, and it's the co-op that owns the wind farm. And then Ripple is a private company. We're the managing agent for the co-op. So we provide services to the co-op that basically make everything happen. So we do all the sort of complicated stuff. So the members of the co-op can just buy their bit of the wind farm, sit back and relax, and they don't have to do anything at all.
And the co-op is the organization, it's a legal entity, owns, so you are part, that's where your money's gone and you own and that wind turbine. And even after a period of time, say there's a company come along, I don't know, we'll call them Tipple, and they're slightly better and cheaper at what you do. The co-op could even choose to have them run the wind turbine after a period of time.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So you know, we don't, a bit like, you know, we don't want our customers to be locked into one supplier for 25 years. We don't want the co-op to be locked into, it's not healthy for us to know, okay, this is fine. We've got this for 25 years. So after a period of time, in theory, somebody else can come along, and if we're doing a terrible job, they can just appoint somebody else to do that for them. So yeah, it's completely, it's completely separate, but it's the co-op which owns the project, and they basically put all the strings, and we just support them, and we're the sort of facilitator of the whole thing, but the co-op is the entity that's in charge of everything.
So basically, the way you've said it, the way Ripple Energy set up with the co-op, you're just the manager, the helper of the project. But if the co-op, like Martin said, decide that you know you're doing a terrible job, you structured it in a way that it can be taken away from you, which kind of it says very straightforward that you want to get this right from day one, and you're not locking people in, which is really really nice to see.
Yeah. The co-op's in control. They can do, you know, and we've purposely done that. You know, a big part of what we're doing is to democratize ownership. And if we were then locking them into us, that's not democratic. Yeah. That's not giving people the choice that we think they deserve. So yeah, totally.
Is that why you called it Ripple then? Because you're causing ripples in the energy industry.
Yeah. And it's a really positive, you know, it is, we want to cause a big change.
Okay. I have more daft questions, Nick. If I can I jump in with some more? Is that okay?
If you got some fantastic daft questions, you go away, Martin.
Hey, okay. Next daft question. I get that I'm investing an amount of money. It's an investment that I'm making for a long-term benefit. Yeah. It's not like buying shares or equities, for instance. So I assume somebody can't come along and say, oh, I'd like to buy your bit of the wind farm. I can't then sell it on an open market or anything.
So you buy shares in the co-op, but because the way the co-op's set up, you can't, there's not going to be a secondary market in your co-op shares, basically. So you can, if you, you know, say you move to America and you don't need any electricity in the UK anymore, or there's another fantastic supplier who isn't one of our supply partners. You're like, right, I don't want to have anything to do with the wind farm anymore. I want to give up my ownership. You can then withdraw your shares in the co-op, and then you basically get their sort of degress. We degress the value of those shares. So, you know, halfway through the wind farm's life, they'll be worth half their original value sort of thing. And then you would just get your share value back again. So again, you're not locked in. We'll then keep a waiting list of people who are like, actually, I've just bought an EV. I want to own a bit more of the wind farm. And then we say, okay, if you want to sell your kilowatt of shares, there's people here wanting, he wants 500 watts and they want 500 watts. So they get to buy your shares at the digressed rate. So there's not going to be, you can't make a profit on your shares basically by selling them. You can get additional value because we expect the savings off your bill to be greater than the money you sort of put in to buy your shares, but you can't, there's not going to be a sort of market and you're not allowed to sell your shares to somebody else. You can only withdraw them and then we can issue them to somebody else.
Okay. Well, I've got two daft questions off the back of that then.
Okay.
So you haven't built a turbine yet, have you?
It's about to start construction. Yeah.
Okay. So if anyone who's invested now, I presume they don't get anything back from the co-op because you've not generated any energy.
So the month after it starts generating, which should be November, they would then see the savings on their bill in December. So basically you get your savings get applied. We look at, okay, this is how much the wind farm's generated each year, each month. This is how much your bit generated. We then tell Octopus, okay, Martin, you need to save £10.58 off your bill. Nick, you need to save £8.39. And then that just gets applied to your December bill based on your amount of generation in November.
So yeah, that's interesting. So on a windy day like today, I can be rubbing my hands together and thinking, I haven't got to wait a year to see this benefit or 25 years. It's literally next month's electricity bill. Exactly. Wow. Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's so cool. And of course, that'll have some seasonal fluctuations as the weather does. Sorry, Nick, carry on.
But those fluctuations are actually, it tends to be windier. Obviously, people use more electricity in the winter. It tends to be windier. It tends to be within the day. It's a bit windier between 4 and 7 at night, actually. So, so it's actually, there's quite a good correlation between, obviously, it goes up and down all the time. But in general, the trend is relatively well correlated with consumption. So, like I said, tends to be windier in the winter. People tend to use more electricity in the winter as well. So, it's far better correlated than, say, solar is, where it's obviously solar generates more in the summer. That's not necessarily when people are using the most electricity.
Yeah, and it also tends to be generating when people are at work and not at home rather than during peak times, which is what wind tends to be peaks. Obviously, we are one of the windiest places in Europe, which most people don't realise. So the first one's being finished in November. The big question, what me and Mar want to know is, when can we come and see it with hard hats and high-vis jackets?
So, yeah, the turbine, I think, will be October. So it's not, we will, like all our members want to have a big opening party. We don't think that's going to be good in November. So we'll probably have next spring, Easter. We're sort of thinking that'll be the right sort of time when we can get some decent weather. Because it's not, I've been on site when it's pouring with rain and it's no fun at all. So yeah, spring next year will be the time to have, we want to, everyone's so excited about it. We're really excited about it. We just want it to create this fantastic day for all our wonderful members. That's looking more like next spring, but the turbine will be there end of this year.
It's a very physical thing. It's in South Wales near Cardiff. It's 2.5 megawatts. And it would be very cool if you owned part of it, I don't know, on a holiday, or even if you live in Wales, to drive past and bore the kids in the back of the car being like, Dad owns a bit of that. Weird question. I'll ask it anyway, because we had a family. We became a family recently, so we had to do a bunch of estate planning. If I invest in a bit of a wind turbine and then the worst happens to me, what happens to my bit of it in terms of inheritance?
Yeah, so basically, like I said, you can't sell your shares to anyone else. The only time you can transfer them to somebody else is if you die. So if you died, basically on our website, you can put in, I want my shares to go to whoever. And then, in the unfortunate event that those shares need to be passed on to somebody else, they can't be. So it's only, they're only inheritable. They can't, like I said, they can't be traded or anything, but they can be inherited by somebody else if you did happen to die.
Okay. Well, thank you for answering that. It's the weird practicalities of things like that. But my mind is kind of running wild in terms of, I would almost want a, I don't know if this is possible, like a dashboard that I could log into as a part owner, and like, how fast is it turning and how much has it made today? Is that even possible, or is that like pie in the sky?
We're all planning that. So we want everyone to be able to see, okay, my whatever 1500 watts is generating this much. We also then want to be able to show people, this is how much you're using in your home. then you can sort of see, okay, I'm generating more than I'm using. You know, your dashboard can say how much you've generated at the moment, today, for the past month since it's been operating, how much electricity bill savings you've had as well. So all of that stuff, we are going to, we're starting developing our sort of operational dashboard at the moment. So yeah, our UX designer is just going for it with all that stuff.
I hate when Martin asks a question that I was about to ask myself. It's literally on my spreadsheet of will we be able to see how fast the turbine is turning. I mean,
we really want to get a webcam so you can see it live.
Oh, yes.
The issue is where we can. There aren't any buildings nearby, so we really want it to happen so that you can just, like, you know, see on your dashboard, you can see it going around. It's where do you put the cam? So
yeah,
that's sort of
the center of the turbine. And
we want people to feel part of it and that they can, you know, they are really sort of attached to it. We don't want it to be like, oh, there's this thing going on over there, but it's got, you know, there's no way you can sort of get involved with it. We want people to be really, really involved, being able to see what's going on. So like I said, a webcam would be brilliant, but where we can put it is the issue.
That's the thing about data, and something that Octopus approved with Agile, which is if you give people the data, they will use it. So if, you know, if someone sees that the turbine's spinning and producing lots of energy, and there's a surplus, they go, oh, I can plug my car in, my turbine's generating electricity. I think involving people in the data, Octopus has shown people are more interested in energy than other people actually think. You know, most people in the energy sector think nobody cares about energy, but it's not true.
Exactly. And there'll be so much data, and it will just be, it's a really good challenge to have to, like, turn all this data into something that's really easy to see, easy to use, easy to sort of, like, translate into, okay, I can see this, so I will do whatever, I will go and charge my car. Or and you know, ultimately we want to skip that bit so that your car will know when your wind farm's operating or not. So yeah, there's just so much really cool data that we can show people. It's more about how do we sort of keep it super simple for the people that aren't interested whilst also giving all that detail for the people that are. And that's the sort of, I think ultimately it'll just be like, right, you unlock all these other things if you want, but if you just want to see the high level stuff, that's fine, you can.
Yeah. And I think what's really interesting is I'm starting to understand now how many variables are involved. So if it's windy or if it's not in terms of the generation will affect my return. And you talked about the 25-year life of the wind turbine as well, but also those other factors in terms of the wholesale price. So there are lots of variables. So there might not be one single answer to this, but I guess a common investment question is if I say I'm handing over, you know, X pounds out the door today, a lot of people would say, well, what's my ROI on that? So after how many years, when do I break even and then I'm in the black? But can you answer that question without lots of disclaimers?
We have three different, so the key variables are the electricity price. So we use three different government price scenarios for the electricity price. And then we have three different scenarios for how much generation over the course of a year the wind farm generates. So then we just have a table in our share offer document. We sort of set out, okay, in the sort of lowest wind scenario and the lowest price scenario, your IRR would be X percent. In the best scenario with the highest wind output and the highest electricity price, it would be Y. And so we make it all really super clear that, you know, we base everything, all the sort of headline figures is just on the sort of central of both cases. But yeah, you can. And it's, I think it's 4.7% for over 25 years is sort of the sort of central case is what we expect. Obviously, that is open to, you know, the different sort of scenarios. But yeah, broadly, that's what we're expecting.
So if it's 4.75%, ROI at the moment, I presume if wholesale prices did dramatically increase, then the return investment would be greater. Yes. If for some reason we figure out a way of making endless energy for free, then obviously then that would drop. But yep. You know, in theory, energy prices do tend to go up.
Yeah. So, and also in the, you know, in the low scenario where electricity prices are really low, it's almost like a hedge because, okay, your return from your wind farm wouldn't be as high, but also your electricity bill isn't going to be as high either. So it's sort of, you are sort of partly protected on a sort of, you know, whole household income basis because, you know, okay, the return, the saving off your wind farm is as much, but actually it's not as much because your bill slows lower anyway.
Yeah, we had that weird COVID time this time last year where on the Agile tariff, at least it was going negative during the day. And it was, you know, we're plugging in the car and using the immersion to heat the hot water. And then maybe September, October time, Nick, you were saying some generation went offline or something, but I noticed how they were, you know, it was capped at 35 pence, which Octopus do with Agile and it must have been higher than that. So let me ask you about the lifespan, because 25 years is a long, you know, it's a long-term play. This isn't for everyone. If you, like you say, if you are planning on, I don't know, moving house every couple of years, and in 2 years you might want to cover your house in solar, you might want to save your money for that. But if you're pretty sure that, well, maybe you're in this house for a long time, or even if you move, you don't want to cover your roof
and
solar panels.
If you move house, it goes with you anyway. So yes, it's only if you wanted to move and put solar panels on your new house. Yeah.
You know, you think, well, I'm not going to save my money. If I'm buying a house and it's got a north facing something, you know, no point having that money sat in the bank. So I'll invest in a wind farm. What happens after? So it is definitely a long-term play, and not for everybody, but for a certain type of person. But what happens after 25 years?
So again, the co-op decides. So, so after whatever, probably 18 years, we can look at, okay, so how's it going, basically? Do we want to help the co-op try and get planning permission to put a new turbine on, maybe a bigger turbine? Do we want to, you know, maybe do a big refurbishment of the turbine and extend its life by, whatever, 5, 10 years? Or do we just want to say, okay, we've had a lovely time, but we're just going to dismantle we're going to sort of run the turbine for as long as it can, and then we're just going to dismantle it. But basically, it will be the co-op that decides that. So, yeah, the co-op will just vote on what it wants to do. If it's about putting up a new turbine, then obviously there'll have to be more, you know, there'll have to be new investments. It'll be, you know, brand new turbine. But yeah, ultimately, the members decide. So nothing is determined. It's not like this will happen. Ultimately, it's up to what the members want to do as to what will happen.
Now you've brought up, and I've got to ask this geeky fact now, Martin's going to love this as well. How many megawatts are the turbines that you're putting up, the first initial ones?
Two and a half.
So every one turn,
there's only a single turbine. Turbine, 2.5 megawatts.
So one turn, it generates 2.5 meg. How does it work?
So if it was operating at full output for an hour, it would generate 2 megawatt hours. So each turn will power a house for 8 hours.
At full power,
one rotation would power a house for 8 hours.
Wow. That's very cool.
Martin liked that fact, didn't you, Martin?
No, I love that. How does it compare to, because, you know, offshore has been so big, and particularly when I go see friends either in the, you know, the Northwest or North Wales, and you do that car journey and you look out to sea and there's, you know, you could just, as far as the eye can see. So offshore has been very popular. How does this compare to the kind of turbines being installed at the moment in the UK in terms of size, wise, and generation?
So it's pretty small compared. So 2.5 megawatts. The first offshore turbines were 2 megawatts. Obviously, that was 20 years ago. Offshore turbines have just got huge now. So you'll get the biggest is they're getting up to sort of 12, 13, even 15 megawatts. I mean, they're just, you know, and a one rotation can power a house for like 2 days. They're huge. I mean, those turbines, and they, you know, our one is 125 meter to the tip. Some of those offshore ones are like 230 meters to the tip. They are just huge. And, you know, the diameter of the rotors are like 200 meters plus. They're just vast, vast machines. And it's just incredible to have seen what's happened to offshore technology over the last 20 years, because it is, you know, it's so impressive what's been achieved.
Wow.
Yeah. So what? One question I've got to ask, as we're getting close to the end now, Sarah, is obviously this month is Women's History Month, and you know, there is not a lot of women currently in the clean tech industry. Is there anything that Ripple are trying to do to try and encourage more women into the industry?
So it used to be at the beginning, 20 years ago, it was mostly, well, not mostly, there was a far, it was, yeah, there was a lot of women, sort of typified by women. And then 10 years later, all the boys piled in, basically.
But
in terms of, sort of consumers as well, I think, you know, and like we've been sort of like wrestling with this as well. So like our first 100 customers, only 11% were women. We have been trying to sort of appeal to more women because, you know, ultimately we want to be mainstream. We don't want to be, you know, a sort of like niche thing. We want it to appeal to the mainstream. And obviously the women are a big part of the mainstream. So in our last 100 customers, 25 are women. So we have, you know, when we've been trying to sort of, you know, I think just sort of, the hypothesis that we're testing, and when we need to obviously do more testing, is that, you know, it tends to be the early adopters who, you know, love all the detail and knowing exactly, you know, the real ins and outs of how everything works, and really want to get into the detail. They tend to be men, and actually women, I expect, or I think, I just like, they just want it to work and not have to worry about all that sort of stuff. And so it's about, like I sort of said before, that it's getting all that data and all that really, really geeky stuff that's really cool, but also lots of people wouldn't necessarily be interested in that. So it's about balancing it out with, you know, if you don't want to get involved in any of that stuff, you just don't have to. You can keep it out, you know, really super simple. And, you know, I don't know, obviously myself as a woman, it's just like, I just want it to work. I don't really, it's just like, I just, you know, you're quite busy and you just want it to work. And so I think it's about us sort of, you know, making it easy and yeah, just not a hassle for people. And but also not losing all that data and all that really cool stuff, but not making that a requirement to be involved. So it's a bit like, you know, like with EV, some people really want to know, you know, how many miles they're going to get from a charge and all that sort of stuff. And other people are like, I just want to use my car sort of thing. And ultimately, you have to appeal to both. And so we are sort of, we're trying to do a sort of, you know, just a more sort of stripped down version of, okay, this is how you join. It's really easy. You don't have to worry about anything. Whilst also still giving all the cool techie stuff, making all that available for the people that want it. So it's sort of, yeah, it is. We're learning as we're going, basically. So I just checked today on the sort of customer numbers, and I was really pleased that it has. I sort of felt that it had been, you know, like we sort of do our website chats and stuff, and I sort of felt like there were more women that I was sort of chatting to. So yeah, I was really pleased that it has started. Obviously, there's still a long way to go, but yeah, I think it's just about stripping it back and just being like, right, this is. It just works. Just do this and then it's done. You haven't got to worry about it. But yeah, as I said, whilst not losing all the cool stuff as well. So yeah, it's a bit of a challenge, but it's one that we want to, you know, succeed in.
I'd love to use the last few minutes just to answer a few questions. And I brought this up before we went live, actually. And that was that whole thing of, you know, if you live in a block of flats and there's a hole in the roof, all of a sudden the management agency will come to you and say, oh, well, now you owe us $2,000. You've got to chip in because there's a hole in the roof. So Raj has that question. What about repairs and maintenance? What if it falls over?
Yeah, so all of that, you know, so the operating costs of the wind farm, you know, there's no fuel involved. So the operating costs are the operations and maintenance contracts, all the insurance, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, the wind farm's operating costs are, it's not the fuel, it's all the insurances and stuff like that to cover those eventualities. So it's all the asset management, getting, you know, we'll have a contract in place with the turbine manufacturer. They will then be the ones doing all the operations and maintenance, delivering all the repairs and spares and whatever else is needed. So that's all wrapped into the operating costs, which you pay via your electricity bill, basically.
Now, Pete asks, is it a co-op per turbine or is it an overarching thing?
No, it'll be a co-op for each project. So this is a single turbine project, but if we had five turbine project, there would be one co-op for that whole project. You can, however, be members of both. So you could own a little bit of Greg Rather, our first project. You could own a little bit of a solar project. You could own a little bit of an offshore wind farm in time. So you can just do a sort of, you know, clean energy sort of pick and mix, own a little bit of that, you know, just it's really, really flexible, basically. And you all just get all of those. If you own a bit of a wind farm, a bit of a solar park, a bit of an offshore wind farm, it all just feeds through to one saving on your bill. Obviously, again, coming back to the customer dashboard, you'll be able to see how much your wind farm and how much your solar park has generated each day. It'll just be like we're imagining it'll be like a bar graph sort of split into the different generation assets. But yeah, you'll be able to be part of as many projects as you want, basically.
So Cloudbase has asked, he's basically asked a question I was going to ask anyway, which is, do you need a smart meter to be a Ripple? No.
You don't. So you can just be on obviously you can be on Agile and you can be on Go, but you can be on Co-op Energy standard, either 12-month fixed tariff or variable tariff. So you don't, and like I said, your savings are driven by how much your generation from the wind farm generates each month. We know that. So it doesn't, you don't need to have a smart meter. You don't need to be on a smart tariff. If your wind farm savings are £10, it's £10 whether you're on the co-op 12-month fixed, variable or agile or go. It's driven by the wind farm, not your specific tariff.
Okay. And so someone's put here, does a member's price incentive have to match the consumption to generation of the wind farm? And is there a minimum investment and maximum investment that you could go into Ripple?
So you don't have to match it at all. So the minimum is £25. Obviously, £25 isn't going to buy you very much of the wind farm, so your savings won't be very much. And then the maximum is the equivalent that would generate 120% of your consumption. So you can't buy 10 times as much of the wind farm as you would need to power your home. You can buy a little bit more, but not loads more. But we, you know, all part of being accessible to as many people as possible, we've set the minimum quite low because we want as many people to be able to access it as possible. And you can do, you know, pay in 5 month installments, buy a bit, buy another bit the next month, you know, however you want to sort of break it up, really. But yeah, so you haven't got to own enough to cover all of your consumption at all. You can own whatever you like, really.
Well, look, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It seems like such a wonderful idea that is clearly the way that things used to be done in terms of cooperatives of groups of people. And I think lots of people, when they think cooperative, they think on a geographical cooperative. Yeah. So a group of houses, a village, or a group of people in a close vicinity to each other. But of course, a community, a cooperative, can be any group of like-minded people. And so, and that's not a particularly new idea. So like all the best ideas are often things, and even you said at the start of the show, like you looked around and said, why is no one doing this? So I'll do it myself then. It's kind of obvious, but it seems like you're kind of almost going back to the future with this idea.
Totally. It's like, you know, in a digital world where, you know, the internet connects people wherever they are, you don't need a co-op to have, you know, it's only people in this village or only people in this town. The beauty of the digital age is that you can form a community of like-minded interests across the whole country. You don't need to be living, you know, and the part of what Ripple does is we bring together all those people from across the country to make something really cool happen. And that's a really, really good thing. So yeah, it is sort of, modernizing the, you know, energy co-op concept, digitalizing it. But, you know, and that then broadens the reach. So, you know, it shouldn't be, you know, I live in London, there's no way I'm going to get a wind farm around here. But everyone should have access to clean energy ownership. So, yeah, we've just gone for really broad access rather than, you know, more sort of like parochial, it has to be in this area. And it just opened up to everyone, we say.
Yeah, I it's been a real pleasure talking to you, Sarah. And as a person who can't have solar on his roof because of the way that his house lease is written, I've always wanted to get more involved and invested in renewable technology. I can't have a wind turbine. I can't have solar. So now I can have a slice of wind turbine. Yeah, I can have a slice of wind turbine, and it'd be nice to, you know, feel as if I own a little part of that turbine. I think you've cracked a real good idea, and I'm surprised no one thought of it sooner, and I'm glad you did.
Yeah, the one thing is people want that sort of, not green bling, but you know, if you've got solar, your neighbours know you've got solar. If you own a bit of a Ripple wind farm, your neighbours are never going to know. So like, you know, somebody was like, can we get like a brass plate for my front gate and stuff? So we're sort of looking at, you know, can you get like a window sticker so you can say, okay, this house is powered by my wind farm over in South Wales. But yeah, people want to do stuff. And we want to help them make the biggest impact they can possibly have.
You can make one of those little turbines with the little solar panels on the front that they put on the car and they spin around.
So, hey, look, how can people find out more? Can people still get in on your turbine number one in South Wales? If they've listened to this now or watched it, can people still get involved?
Yeah, it's still open. So you can just go to rippleenergy.com and then you can just sign up from there. So there's a little, just put in how much your electricity consumption is, and then we work out, if you want to own 100%, this is what you need to do. And then you can just say, okay, I only want to own this much or that much. Yeah, so just go to the website and all the details are there.
Wonderful. Well, look, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Nick, any final words?
Chris Rogers just has you invested yet, Nick. I will be as soon as the show finishes. So Sarah's answered all the questions that I actually wanted. The great thing about this interview is I came into it with honest customer questions that I wanted to ask, and you've answered every single one of them, and even better than I expected. So I will be investing myself later on tonight. I won't do much for the male-female ratio of your customers, but...
Everyone's welcome.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, look, thank you so much for watching and listening. Check out Ripple Energy, also EV Nick, YouTube channel, and EV News Daily podcast. And we'll see you soon. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Well, there are 1,019 previous shows in the archive. You can get them at ev.news on the blog. Thank you to our premium partners on Patreon. Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, nationalcarcharging.com and alohacharge.com. Derek Riley has a great EV YouTube channel. Search EV Review Ireland. And Richard... over a couple of minutes away from me, actually, funnily enough, buying and selling EVs in the UK, Tesla Specialists, rsev.co.uk, and have a great weekend. Catch you soon. Remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Capital One's tech team isn't just talking about multi-agentic AI. They already deployed one. It's called Chat Concierge, and it's simplifying car shopping. Using self-reflection and layered reasoning with live API checks, it doesn't just help buyers find a car they love. It helps schedule a test drive, get pre-approved for financing, and estimate trade-in value. Advanced, intuitive, and deployed. That's how they stack. That's technology at Capital One.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.